మిళితం యేన తస్మై శ్రీ గురవే నమః. శ్రీ చైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపః కదా మహ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం. వందేహం శ్రీగురో శ్రీయుత పదకమలం శ్రీగురూన్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతాం సహగణ రఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజన సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్యదేవం. శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణపాదాన్ సహగణ లలితా శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ. హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపికాకాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే. తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరీ వృషభాను సుతే దేవీ ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే. వాంఛాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్యైవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. నమో విష్ణుపాదాయ కృష్ణపృష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామీనితి నామినే. నమస్తే సరస్వతే దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాదీ పాశ్చాత్యదేశతారిణే. జై శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర్ శ్రీవాసది గౌరభక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. Hare Krishna. So we welcome all the devotees to this new series that they have started. This is a continuous discussion on the 12 Mahajans. Since I am the beginning speaker, I am the speaker who is starting the series. So it's a big responsibility on me to first introduce the topic. First speak about what is this concept of a Mahajan, especially in Western Maharashtra, this part of Maharashtra. Sometimes people also have their last name as Mahajan. I know a few devotees whose uninitiated name is Mahajan. I also know one devotee whose uninitiated name is a Punjabi, but his uninitiated surname is Mahajan. So what exactly is a Mahajan? We'll first discuss that. Then we'll speak about what is the necessity of having a Mahajan. And then we'll come to the central topic of today, that is Lord Brahma. So as per one shloka, which also we'll discuss, there is this list of 12 Mahajans. And the first one in that series is Lord Brahma. So we'll begin, we'll give some discussion to that theme also. Now it's already 1:30 post the drama. So I'm not really sure now how will this go on. Because first we are talking about the concept of a Mahajan, then we'll have to speak about Lord Brahma as a Mahajan, and how to adjust this whole thing in this time available is a challenge for me also. Since we are speaking about great personalities, their glories are also almost infinite. There's so much that can be spoken about Lord Brahma. So please bear with me, and at any point of time, if you feel that you have something else to do, you are completely free to walk out of this door. I can fully understand that there are so many other things also going on. Yeah? But it's like a big challenge for me to do some justice to this topic of Lord Brahma as a Mahajan. So in a very simple way, what is a Mahajan? Mahajan. So Maha is Mahan, great. And Jana means life. So wherever you see some greatness, some great person, he is called Mahajan. In a very simple way, we can also call him an expert. So whether it is in the field of sports, in the field of medicine, in the field of politics, maybe because today we also have a lot of mental diseases in addition to physical diseases, so maybe in the field of psychiatry, somebody who's good at something, any profession, we could call him a Mahajan in that field, in a very loose way, in a very simple way. So our understanding of, when we talk of an expert, especially in the professions that we discussed just now, is somebody who can do things nicely, and also he has to have a lot of good knowledge. So around 2 years back, I had a small injury on my thumb. There was some small particle, maybe of wood or something, we could not detect it finally, but something went inside. And I visited a nearby hospital here to save some time. And the simple surgeon there, he took hold of my thumb, gave me some local anesthesia, and just cut open my thumb here, right in front of my eyes. And all that blood started spurting out, and I'm just looking at my thumb. I'm just thinking, what is he doing with my thumb? Then after, for some time, when he cut open this thumb, and then he was looking for something, he could not see anything. Then he said, maybe I didn't do it properly. So I said, that's nice news. And there's almost maybe 100 ml of blood on the floor. And it's all just coming out of this place. Then finally I looked at him, I'm just taking it as some kind of a lesson in tolerance or something. Then he says, actually I did not do it properly. So he just accepted it, and he didn't beg for any forgiveness or anything. But what he indicated was that probably you should go somewhere else. So then I said, okay, this is a new lesson for me. So then he put a bandage around it, I came here, and then I went to one public hospital. I went to KEM hospital. And then there was one doctor whom I knew there. So then he brought the chief surgeon, and then he again recut that kind of healed wound. And then he also, you know, because they don't have to give the anesthesia to the whole body. So I'm looking at my thumb, and he's almost cutting it, the whole skin part he cut, and I could almost feel, I could hear the sound of that scalpel. It almost hit my bone inside. So, you know, it just cut and hit my bone inside. And then he looked at me with confidence, and then he told me, did you, because he saw the cut also, the previous cut, he said, did you get this operated somewhere else also? So I said, yes, I did. So he said, probably the way he did it, because it was like big cut, the previous doctor, untrained one. So because maybe he just cut it in a very gruesome way, not in a proper way, so probably, you know, that whole blood that came out, that small particle also just, you know, fell out. That was his analysis, because the second doctor could not find anything there. So it was an interesting situation where the first person was completely untrained. He cut it open and he accepted his folly. He said that he didn't do it properly. But it turned out that actually that small piece of wood had come out in that whole blood coming out. And then when I went to an expert, he did it expertly, but finally, you know, he understood that it had already been done. The next time when I went to the doctor, there was actually nothing in my thumb there. So I'm just giving you a scenario where sometimes we have trust in a person who's trained, and then he does not need to do what he's good at. And sometimes by mistake, somebody who's untrained and somebody who accepts that he's untrained, but he might actually solve your problem. So we are not talking of such Mahajans, because when we are talking of experts, we are talking of experts who know what they are doing. They are sure about how what they are doing is the best remedy. Yes. And actually it gives you some results also. So I would say that's very important to understand what is the concept of a Mahajan. In India, cricket is a very popular sport. So many times they talk about the experts in cricket as being some kind of a deity. So when that expert player is playing, one devotee was saying, the Indians are ready to clap. But sometimes when he's not playing, then they are ready to slap. So the Mahajans of this world, they're experts, no doubt, but finally they also have to measure up to some standard. If they do not live up to the expectations that people have on them, they are no longer considered Mahajans. So their Mahajan-ness, if we can call it, is very limited, and it is also dependent on what people think about them. In their own right, they may not be Mahajans. So in one of the purports, Prabhupada writes, the Mahajan of this world, he may be a great person in the field of business. Last Janmashtami, I remember there was one diamond merchant or somebody. He's a famous person outside. One devotee told me, I didn't know him. But he came to our temple for offering Abhishek to the deities on Janmashtami day. And I saw quite a few of devotees impressed by that. And then I was asking, who is this person? Then they told me he's one of the biggest stockbrokers. So they have their own hall of fame. So maybe you are a businessman, maybe you are a person who's trying to enjoy this world. Maybe you are a yogi. Right now yoga is a very special word all over the world. So whether you are trying to enjoy this world or whether you are trying to renounce this world, whatever it is, but every field is an expert and they have their own glory. How does this concept of Mahajan come for us? We may be doctors, so we may be impressed by somebody expert in the field of medicine. We may be engineers and we may be impressed by somebody in the field of engineering. But finally, there is one thing for which we are here today. This is not an engineering seminar, this is not a medicine seminar. Here we are trying to understand what is the goal of life. What is life meant for? What is my relationship with this world around me? In this kind of a situation, the concept of Mahajan is important for us because I would say in today's times, we are underdeveloped and overexposed. So we are overexposed to gadgets, thinking that we'll benefit from those gadgets. But we are underdeveloped in our skills, in our understanding of how to use them, in what way to use them. We may have our smartphones, but that does not necessarily qualify us to be smart. In fact, there is some research that the more you use smartphones, because everything is done by that gadget, it tends to dull you. You become more dull as you use. So in today's times, our minds are in a way ruling us. Have you ever been to a doctor for some disease and then you ask a doctor, what is the medicine for this disease? And he says, well, the medicine for this disease is this. And then as you are about to take it in your hands, he withdraws that medicine. Think about it. And he gives, no, sorry. The medicine for your disease is this. And then he scratches his head and again replaces it with a third medicine. So in a matter of 5 minutes, if this doctor is changing his medicine, the solution for you is this, the solution for you. Would you have trust on this doctor? Would you go and visit him? No, never. But this is what we have done when it comes to our mind. Just like we go to the doctor for a solution of our disease, many times we turn to our mind and say, this is happening in my life right now. This is the situation in which I am in my life right now. What is the solution? So the mind one time will say, you know what, just relax. Time heals everything. So you say, okay, I'll relax. And then 5 minutes later the mind will say, I think you should do some yoga. Then you try to go through some book of yoga. Then he says, actually I heard the Hare Krishnas are having some program today. So maybe you should go to the Hare Krishna program. There's a cinema going on. There's a cricket match going on. There are so many options that the mind keeps throwing at us. And somehow we are like that patient who have developed a lot of patience in the mind, thinking that in all these options that the mind keeps changing, maybe one of those options will work for me. But unfortunately, all of us are testimony that none of those options for a long, long time have worked for us. And that's why we are here trying to understand what is life all about. So, many years back, I would see at people's homes on the wall, there would be an oscillating clock. As you remember, tick, tock, like that. And now I don't see them. Probably in some museum you might see them. So we have replaced those tick-tock clocks, those oscillating clocks, with these digital watches. But our mind still has its own variety of tick-tock. Yes, Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion talks about how the modern man suffers from two phenomena. Bhoga, tyaga. Bhoga, tyaga. So sometimes he's in an enjoyment mood and he tries to enjoy things of this world. Sometimes there is frustration of not getting it. Sometimes there is anger at getting it but not getting what was promised. So then he goes to the other extreme. From tick he goes to talk. Says tyaga. He says, oh, this world is not meant for enjoyment. Let me just renounce this world. That does not last for long. Again he comes to enjoyment. So this is essentially our story. Keep on oscillating. We have ourselves, if you just think about it, we have introspected and we have seen times when we feel very helpful towards people around us. Probably we have friends and sometimes they are in a very distressful situation. So we get a very good feeling in our heart. Maybe I should extend myself and help that person. And sometimes we help somebody. But there is always this expectation of getting something in return. And if we don't get that something in return, next time another person calls us for help. So if you are a student, then during exam times usually you get some phone calls from your friends. Please help me. If you are a businessman, somebody who is in need of money, there is always somebody who is needing some money, emergency, and he'll call you. So if you helped somebody and it did not work out the way you wanted it to work out, next time when somebody asks you for help, there is a thought inside, I don't want to help anybody now. Last time I helped that person, he ditched me. He didn't reciprocate with me. So we have these tick-tock. Yes? Sometimes you feel like helping people, sometimes you don't feel like helping people. There's always this desire to change lanes when you're speeding on a highway. When you're driving, the recommended way of driving is just follow in a single lane. But there's always this temptation to change lanes and somehow go ahead. But we know how risky it is it not? Some years back I would see, when I would go to people's homes, there would be a refrigerator, a typical appliance in everyone's home. And on top of that refrigerator, I would see a small box. It was an electronic box. Does anybody remember what that was? It's called a voltage stabilizer. So why would people need a voltage stabilizer? Because the expected voltage in the mains supposed to be something close to 220 or 230 volts, but the electric supply, it is accepted that sometimes it drops down and sometimes it goes up. So that voltage stabilizer is something which is very important. You may give any input voltage, but it will always make sure that it is between that permissible range. So I would say today our minds are also like that fluctuating electric current. Sometimes we are very happy, sometimes we are distressed. Sometimes we want to help people, sometimes we want to harm people. On a highway we want to race. We don't mind pushing people. We don't mind hurting people. Just get what you would want to get. And why is this happening? Because we are always asking that doctor who's not sure about himself when he's giving you that medicine. So just like the voltage stabilizer has a very important function, that it stabilizes the current and gives you the right current. And what do you do with the right current? If an electrical appliance like a refrigerator, like a television, does not have the proper voltage fed into it, what harm could happen? It will not function properly. Probably it will just blow up. Similarly, imagine yourself, that your mind, just think about it for some time. Sometimes it's high voltage, sometimes it's low voltage. This is typically our story today. What would happen to such an appliance? It would never function properly. So actually, there's a research which says that Albert Einstein, who's considered the most intelligent person of modern times, based on their Mahajans, it is said that he did not use more than 5% of his brain, maximum. The human brain has a capacity to function at a certain level, and the most intelligent person, they said, he just used somewhere around 5% of his brains. So just think about it, all of us here, you know, we have to rethink, what are we doing? Are we really utilizing God-given capabilities? If you look around the world today, there's so many living entities. There are infinite, the Padma Puran says, Jalaja Nava Lakshani, Sthavara Lakshavimshati, Kramayor Rudra Sankhyayam. So it is said that aquatics are 9 lakh in numbers, species. The trees are 20 lakh in numbers. Insects are 11 lakh in numbers, and so on. And the last figure in this shloka, it says, the humans are 4,000 in number. So on one side you have 20 lakh trees, varieties of trees. And the humans are only 4,000. And out of those 4,000, on the earthly planet, there are only 60,000 out of those 4 lakh, and then 60,000 out of those 4 lakh. But if you look at the world outside, almost every species, it may be trees, it may be aquatics, it may be birds, it may be animals, it may be any of the rest of the species, they have almost been conquered by the human species. We have done so much progress. We have entered the realm of water and outdone the aquatics. The best aquatics cannot compete with us when the humans enter the water. The best birds cannot fly like when humans enter the sky with their planes. Yes? So with whatever we could do with this small part around here, above our eyes, in the cranium, there is a small fleshy part. Just based on that small part, we have outdone aquatics in their area, in water. We have outdone the birds in their area, which is sky. We have tamed elephants on land. We have tamed lions on land. It means something is special here. So there's something special about our brain, but we cannot function properly. And why can't we function properly? Because we are always in these extremes. So I would say, a good Mahajan, he may be a doctor in the realm of medicine and all, but in this assembly I would say, a good Mahajan, I would say, should be able to teach us how to regulate our thoughts, how to always keep us in the belt of sanity, not allow us to go to the upper extreme, not allow us to go to the lower extreme. So if somebody can help us do this, there is already so much potential in us. He just has to keep us in that belt. Don't go too high, don't become too happy, don't just start dancing at every small thing that happens in your life. Don't start crying at every small thing that goes against your wish. I would say that itself will be a good start for all of us to take advantage of the human form of life. So if you see the Bhagavad Gita, 2.13 is where Krishna speaks for the first time how Dehi nosmin yatha dehe. And 2.14, if you see, immediately after that shloka, even before he goes off into speaking the glories of the spirit soul, 2.16 to 2.25, he speaks about the glories of the spirit soul. But you know what is 2.14? It is not a continuation of the spirit soul. Immediately he says, Matra sparshastu kaunte. So 2.13 is your identity. And 2.14, immediately he switches the topic, saying that, since you are spirit soul, you should learn to tolerate the dualities of this world. So there's a lot of import in that shloka there. Unless we learn to tolerate the ups and downs of life, we cannot function in life. So I just thought that I would introduce this topic of voltage stabilizer. A Mahajan is somebody who stabilizes our life, who stabilizes the voltage of our thoughts. And then when we are sane, we can actually think of our benefit, we can actually act upon it. Since we have all accepted the Vedic understanding to some extent, and that's why we are all sitting here, sometimes people ask this question. I want to read the original Vedas. You people just are into distribution of Gita, Bhagavatam, a few books here and there. But what about the Upanishads? What about the Samhitas? So just to tell you, there are 18 Puranas, and out of that just one is the Bhagavatam. So don't raise your hand. You don't have to answer this question visibly, but just ask this question to yourself. Prabhupada has given us one Puran, the Srimad Bhagavatam. And how many of us have completed reading the Srimad Bhagavatam? Just one Puran out of the 18 Puranas, we are struggling to just finish off that one Puran. So there are 18 Puranas, then there are 108 Upanishads. We just have one Upanishad, Ishopanishad, translated by Prabhupada. And just ask this question to yourself, have you read that one Upanishad that we have readily amongst us? Out of the entire Mahabharata, we have 700 shlokas in the form of the Gita. And there are people who have not even finished reading the entire Gita once. So where is the question of reading the whole Vedas? Even if they were made available by somebody, do we have the time? Do we have the understanding to read it? Even if we read it, would we understand, would we comprehend it properly? Or would we mistake certain things to be important and certain important things to be unimportant? So another role of a Mahajan is, he just does not give us what we ask for in a stabilized way. He also chooses amongst the varieties of information, varieties of help that is good for us, he gives us something that is custom made for us. So he looks at us, he says, who is this person? This is a Kali Yuga soul. Kali Yuga soul means there is no inherent culture. I was talking to one devotee and he told me, I was just changing my thread, the sacred thread. Somehow my spiritual master has mercifully given me the sacred thread. So I was changing my thread and he told me, there are some Brahmins whom he knows. He was saying, just by looking at your thread, they can tell you which Gotra you are from. So he was saying that traditionally Brahmanas, they change their thread, they make that thread themselves. So the way they tie that knot, there are two knots on that thread. So the way they tie that knot depends on different people. So there are some Brahmanas from Ayodhya area, there are some Brahmanas from Mathura area, Chaube, like that. Some Brahmanas from Madhya Pradesh area. All of these Brahmanas from different areas, they have different ways of tying their knots. So I was just thinking, this is very interesting. Just by looking at the knot, I can understand who you are. Yes? So this was culture. What is culture? Culture is, we identify a person, and we don't identify a person just to create some distinction. We identify a person to understand the best way to deal with that person. So right in front of me, there are some people here, and I don't know who they are, what are their professions. So if I find out this gentleman here is a doctor, then I can deal with him, I can talk with him accordingly. If I find out this Prabhu here is a CA, chartered accountant, then I can deal with him in a particular way. If I find out he's a student, then I can talk to him in a certain way. It will help me and it will help him. So culture that was there in our times, in our country, and it is somehow conspicuous by its absence today, would help people to start off in a very simple way, but there was already some knowledge that you would understand by just looking at people. A typical South Indian person, he is dressed in that white dhoti which goes around, yes, and then he has a shawl like this. A typical Bengali person has a wide forehead. A typical Punjabi person has a big hefty body, yes. So if you see somebody, you know some basic things about him. Gujarati people like a lot of sugar in their food. Punjabi people, in every season, they like lassi. Yes. So there is something, if you know about him culturally, you don't have to spend time identifying with that person. Today, we don't have culture. I went to Amritsar one point of time. Just outside Amritsar station, when we got down, there was a dosa shop there. So they're selling dosas in Amritsar. One time we went on a yatra to South India, I saw aloo parathas in Rameshwaram. This is a true story. Yes. So you don't know what is happening. There's no culture. Even if you had some culture, you don't have any guidance from anybody. So there's nobody in your life to guide you. The typical guru of any family would be the father. The father usually would guide his own sons and daughters. Today, in most cases, the father is super busy earning money just to keep, just to meet both ends. Yes? It's difficult. Just earning money is difficult. So the father, who is a traditional guru for the family, the mother, who is a traditional guru for the family, in typical Indian household today, they are earning money. They don't have time. The child is busy going through different courses. There is so much to achieve. So in this whole situation, think about it. Even if you get the Vedas, what will you study? What will you understand? So it is very important for us to understand the concept of a Mahajan. Mahajan not only helps us remain stable mentally, but he also, out of the vast body of knowledge that is available to us, he chooses what is the best and he gives to us and he says, considering your particular situation, I think if you read these one or two books, it will be sufficient. This is the essence. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of his kindness, understanding that we don't have time, we don't have culture, we don't have intelligence, we have so many distractions, told us, please read these two books, the Gita and the Bhagavatam. They are the essence of all scriptures. So, in one situation, when Lord Chaitanya was visiting Vrindavan, he came to Mathura, and it is said he visited the Sri Keshav Dev Mandir in Mathura. That is at the birthplace of Lord Krishna. And he started Kirtan there, seeing the deity of Lord Keshav. And when he started Kirtan, one local Brahman joined him. And he was just so happy to see Lord Chaitanya dancing. He also started dancing. Just so happy. And as they both started dancing, a crowd of people assembled there, they also started participating. And Lord Chaitanya could see, out of all these people here, this one Brahman is somebody special. He has some special liking for this Sankirtan that I am doing. So after that Sankirtan stopped, he asked this Brahman, I can see some ecstatic symptoms in you. What is the reason for this? And this Brahman said, many, many years back, one saint called Sripad Madhavendra Puri had visited Mathura. He said, I had met him and he took prasad at my home. So we had a small interaction. Post that interaction, somehow I just have these wonderful feelings in my heart for Lord Krishna. And as soon as he said that, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a sannyasi and that Brahman was a grihastha. But this sannyasi offered full prostrated obeisances to this Brahman. And the Brahman was just shocked. Till now he is a sannyasi and he is bowing down to him. But then he bows down in return. And he says, why did you do this? So he says, well, I am a grand disciple of the same Madhavendra Puri. And since you are his disciple, you are on the level of my spiritual master. So I should take your blessings. And they had a wonderful discussion. So then this Brahman says, would you like to come to my home and have some food? So Lord Chaitanya says, yes, of course. So he requests the servant of Lord Chaitanya to come and cook in advance. He wants the servant of Lord Chaitanya to cook so that Lord Chaitanya can take prasad at his home. So Lord Chaitanya says, why would my servant cook? You can cook. I'll take prasad at your home. So the servant, this Brahman, he says, well, you know, I'm not a very high class Brahman. My Brahman community is not considered to be high class. And since you are a very exalted sannyasi, I could see it. So he says, it's not good for me to cook and you to have that food. So at that time Lord Chaitanya says, dharma sthapana hetu sadhura vyavar puri gosai raje acharan sei dharmasar. Lord Chaitanya says, well, from technical considerations, it may be that sannyasi should not take food that is cooked by you. But I will just speak one thing. Dharma sthapana hetu sadhura vyavar. He gives a very important concept. He says, why would a devotee, a sadhu, act? What is the concept of action for a devotee? Just like the Supreme Lord has no reason to act, the Supreme Lord acts only out of compassion. We act because we want something, we desire something, we have some desires in our heart and we want to achieve it, that's why we are acting. Why does the Supreme Lord act? The Supreme Lord acts just to have compassion on his devotees. Similarly, why do the pure devotees, exalted devotees act? Dharma sthapane hetu sadhura vyavar. Just to show the right path, what is good, what is not good, what is right, what is wrong. Just for that, the sadhus act. And then he says, puri gosai raje acharana sei dharmasar. It does not matter what is considered right or wrong by society. Puri gosai, Madhavendra Puri, he took prasad at your home and I will take prasad at your home. I don't have any other social consideration. So in that purport, Prabhupada writes, Sripad Madhavendra Puri was a real Mahajan because he understood the absolute truth properly. And throughout his life, he behaved like a pure devotee. So there are two things that Srila Prabhupada highlights. He says, first, Madhavendra Puri knew what is right. And second is, he actually followed it himself in his life. He practiced what he preached. He practiced what he was speaking. So I would say this is the fundamental understanding of what is a Mahajan. Mahajan is somebody who understands, who speaks. But the third very important principle of a Mahajan is he also practices it. So that brings us to this shloka that we have for today's discussion. This is in the sixth canto when the Yamadutas go to Yamraj. They have been thwarted in their attempt by the Vishnudutas when they try to capture Ajamil. So when they go to Yamraj and they tell him, we wanted to capture this Ajamil, he is a sinful person. But the Vishnudutas came and they stopped us. So that time, Yamraj speaks this shloka, which we'll like to speak. Swayambhur Narado Shambhu Kumara Kapilo Manu Prallado Janako Bhishmo Balir Vaya Sakir Vayam. So he's mentioning 12 personalities. Swayambhu is Lord Brahma, Narad Muni, Shambhu is Shiva, Kumara are the four Kumaras, Kapila Muni, Swayambhu Manu, the first Manu, Prahlad, Janak, Bhishma, Bali, Vayasaki is Shukdev Goswami, and Vayam is Yamraj himself. And then he says, Dvadashaite Vijanimo. Dvadash is 12. So, we 12 people, Dvadashaite Vijanimo, Dharmam Bhagavatam Bhata. Only these 12 personalities, Yamraj says, they exactly know, they properly know what is the proper essence, Bhagavata Dharma. What is dear to the Supreme Lord? What should we do to become dear to the Supreme Lord? These 12 personalities know. And then he says, Guhyam Vishuddham Durbodham Yam Gyatva Amrutam Ashnute. So he mentions three things about this special knowledge that these 12 Mahajans have. He says it is Guhyam. Guhyam means it is very secret. Then he says it is Vishuddham. It is pure. And then he said it is Durbodham. Durbodham means it's very difficult to understand. So, the translation is, it is mentioned in English. My dear servants, this transcendental religious principle, which is known as Bhagavata Dharma, or surrender unto the Supreme Lord and love for Him, is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. It is very confidential and difficult for ordinary human beings to understand. But if by chance one fortunately understands it, he is immediately liberated and thus he returns home back to Godhead. So these 12 personalities who are mentioned, they are very special. They have understood things in such a way that they have decoded the vast body of Vedic knowledge. And they can instruct any one of us, if we are ready to hear it in the proper way, on how to go through all the vagaries of material nature and keep our mind stabilized and achieve the highest destination. How many of you have ever been to a mountain climb? Ever been to any mountain trekking or like that? So one time, you know, some of our devotees, we were climbing a mountain. And we came to a point, you know, a typical mountain surface has grass all over. And everywhere you look, it is just grass, grass and grass. So at a particular point of time, because of the rainfall, there was some rainfall before we went there, that whole place was covered by grass. Now on a typical road, which is there in a place like Bombay, you know, there's a tar road. So nothing grows on that, rain or no rain. Sometimes you see some few plants on the side of the road, but on a mountain surface, because it's all soil, there is no tar there. So as soon as there is a little rainfall, there are sprouts. And at one point of time we came to a place where we could not understand, from here where does the road go? Does it go left? Does it go right? What should we do? And if you don't understand mountaineering, it all looks the same. So if you take a wrong turn somewhere, you'll be lost. So then, one of our experts, he told us, look very carefully. Go close to the grass and you'll see, is some grass fresh? Out of all the grass that is there, some grass will be relatively fresher. Look if some grass has been trampled upon. Has somebody stepped on that grass? So even if the mountaineers have trouble finding the right path on the surface of a mountain, but there are always some local villagers there. They use those mountain paths for their own purposes. So then it struck us that when you are on a mountain trekking, please do not expect some signs like go left, you know, 2 kilometers this way and like that. There are no signs there. There are no tar roads there. There are no indicators there to tell you there's a bend there, or slow down, there is a speed breaker there. There is nothing like that. The only guiding principle that works there is somebody before you has walked on that path. Is it not? So, if you are on a mountain and you want to trek it, and for the last 2 weeks nobody has been there, all you can do is just return. But if you have the good luck that on the day on which you are on that mountain, in the morning time, if somebody has walked on that mountain, then some of the grass has been trampled upon. Somebody's feet have fallen on that grass. And then you can see, this grass has been trampled upon. Oh, this is the way. So I would say, a Mahajan is kind of a path breaker. When the Mahajan is understanding the principles, it's all one for him. He has to take upon himself the hard task of understanding, out of all the grass that is there in front of me, what exactly is the route to that point up there? Just like all of us want to find success in life, all of us want to develop some love for the Supreme Lord. So it's like a very high goal that we have. But from where we are, completely controlled by the three modes of nature, and somewhere up there, where some affection for the Supreme Lord will manifest in our heart, what is the route there? There's no elevator. You just sit in the elevator, press a button, and then you just go up, and then you get love of Godhead. It's a spiral. It's a tough thing. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, sometimes you're helpful, sometimes you're not helpful. Yes, so that's why I'm calling it a spiral. It's not even a straight path. So typically on a mountain, if you want to climb, you cannot climb straight. Many times when you climb, you have to go round like this. But that's how it's a little easier. It's still tough, but it's a little easier. So what is the job of a Mahajan? The job of a Mahajan is, he has to take all the risks. He has to find out what to do, what not to do. And then if it is possible for him, he also sets up some kind of guides or something for the people following behind. And if you are on a mountain trekking where there has been nobody on that mountain for ages, you just have to return back. Similarly, unless we had these 12 Mahajans to guide us, to let us know what is right, what is not right, we would not carry on in our devotional service. Srila Prabhupada gives a simple example that when he was traveling on a boat from India, when he was going to New York, he was saying how in the Atlantic Ocean at one point of time, the sea became so rough and the captain, he just didn't understand what to do. So on the road definitely you have these signs, and up in the sky sometimes you can go to a height where there are no clouds. So you are above the storm. But on the sea, somehow the situation is very, very difficult. What is that? You cannot escape the storm. You have to maintain contact with the water. At the same time, there are no signs anywhere. So he was saying how the captain was completely confused. So where to go? What to do? There's water everywhere. Sometimes there is lightning, there are clouds, and sometimes the sea water was also rising very high. They said in that situation, when the captain was completely confused, he took out some charts. So he took out some maps, and there were some indications there. And then Prabhupada gives this example how on a typical world map there are these lines drawn. Okay, so it's called longitude and latitude. So on the earth planet, if you happen to go to a certain height, would you see any of those lines there? There are no lines on the earth planet. There is no longitude latitude. So what is this longitude latitude? Some experts who took time out and who flew over the world, who also journeyed by sea, these are imaginary lines drawn on the earth map by which we are able to locate where we are. So in the midst of a sea storm, if everything is lost, it's complete darkness. You can't see anything, you cannot understand anything. If you can understand where is your locus standi, they say, what is your position there, then on the map it says 20 degrees northwest, if you go, in another 100 kilometers you will strike an island. That is the nearest land from the point where you are. So if you look out from your binoculars, you don't see any island. And probably there's greater storm in that direction. And there's no storm in some another direction. But you have to just negate the thoughts that are coming to you. You just have to stick to that map. And you say, the previous Mahajans, they have traveled on this ocean. They have traveled using the boat. And they have put it on paper. And they are telling me, even if it does not make sense, travel in this direction and you will strike land and you will be safe from the storm. In a small way, this is what the Mahajans do. The Mahajans guide lost souls in the darkness of life. Some solutions appear to be very alluring. Some solutions appear to be very simple. Just in this drama, I heard they were saying about how there is this book called The Secret. They made a reference to that book. So, you know, according to this book, this person is saying that whatever you wish for very strongly, that happens in your life. That's this. So, sometimes people come up with this kind of false temporary philosophies. If it's all about desiring, this world would have been a different place, is it not? So many of us want to be rich, rich and super rich. But all of us know the foam that comes out of our mouth when we are trying to earn money. All of us want to, all the students, they want to stand first in their exams. But all of us know how the eyes pain when you're sitting in the library the whole night studying and still you don't get a rank. So if it's only about desiring, it would have been a different world. So the point was that many times in this darkness, sometimes there is some light from somewhere and says, maybe this is the solution. All this kind of new age philosophies that come up. But these Mahajans will tell us, don't go in that direction. It is a false light. Go in this direction. There is permanent rescue available. The Supreme Lord is waiting for you in this direction. So that is what I would call the contribution of a Mahajan. We'll go ahead. We'll come to Lord Brahma, who is the Mahajan whom we are trying to discuss today. What is the greatness of Lord Brahma? So in one purport, in the 9th canto, it is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada, because Lord Brahma is the first, the greatest living entity. He is the secondary creator in this universe. So he is the greatest living entity in this universe. So Prabhupada says this position of Lord Brahma is given to a person who falls down from the spiritual world. So all of us sitting here at one point of time, when we fell down from the spiritual world, the first species, the first life that all of us had was the position of Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma, this word Brahma denotes the post, not the name of the person. Just like many times we call Surya Dev. So Surya Dev has a name. His name is Vivaswan. There is a personality called Indra, but he has a name. His name is Purandar. So similarly, this Lord Brahma is a post, and there is a person who is occupying that post, and there is one Brahma for one universe. So wherever we were, at one point of time, all of us occupied this post. This post is for those who are extremely elevated, because the spirit soul, when he falls from the spiritual world, is almost completely pure, but he had some small contamination, that's why he falls to the material world. Or sometimes a living entity, he has already taken birth in some species, but because of sadhana, because of some purification that he undergoes, he rises up the evolution ladder. So wherever he is right now, but then he elevates himself from the human species to the demigod species, and then so on. So sometimes you get the post of a Brahma when you're coming down, and sometimes you get the post of a Brahma when you're rising up. Yes? So who gets the post of Brahma when you're rising up? Somebody who's completely pure. He does not even have a gross body. He has a subtle body. He has executed all his duties that are expected from him perfectly. So, in your life, there are some expectations that people have from you. They are your duties. Your duty as a son, your duty as a father, your duty as a husband, your duty as a friend, and so on. Your duty as a devotee. So for unlimited lifetimes, for many, many lifetimes, spotlessly, if you carry out your duties, that takes a lot of purification. It's not easy to be dutiful in this world. There are so many distractions, there are so many oppositions within and without. So through all of it, if we stick to our duties, then you go upward and then you get that post of Lord Brahma. I'll just tell you the lifetime of Lord Brahma. So we all know it is 311 trillion and 40 million years. But when I say 311 trillion and 40 million years, we exactly don't understand what it is. Yes. So I wrote it down and I'll speak it out just to get an understanding of how elevated this post is. It is 311 000 040 000 000. These many years. This is the lifetime of Lord Brahma. So definitely he's a great person. He is engaged in the creation in the sense of a mason, a person who puts the bricks together. But before he puts the bricks together, the brick maker has to supply the bricks. The cement factory has to supply the cement. The river, you have to get water from the river. The architect has to have a plan for the home. So, after all these things are ready, then the ordinary mason, then he takes that cement, mixes water, takes the brick, takes the plan that he has, and then he makes a home. Yes? So to an ordinary eye, it is the mason who makes the home. But if you are a little intelligent, then you can understand the brick maker, water, the cement factory, the architect, all of them have contributed. So in that sense, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Lord, he supplies the basic ingredients for creation, and it is Lord Brahma who is like the secondary creator. He is like the bricklayer. So it takes shape through Lord Brahma, but the constituents, earth, water, fire, air, ether, they are all, they have to be manifested by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, Lord Vishnu. He also has this task that after he creates the physical world, all of us, we get impregnated, the spirit souls get impregnated in a particular universe. And depending on our karma, he has this big, huge task of something that I would call match the following. Yes. In school days, I remember there were certain facts on the left side and there were certain personalities on the right side. And we had to match the achievements of a personality to the proper personality. Yes. So in that sense, when the universe is created, whatever karma the spirit soul had in the previous life, so Lord Brahma, with his four heads, with his high intelligence, he has that database. All the spirit souls and their karma. And then he is creating all the different species, aquatics, trees, birds, animals and all. And depending on what is your karma at that moment, he allots the body. That's how the universe is set into motion. So just think about it. Lord Vishnu just supplies the basic ingredients. After that, the whole thing is done by Lord Brahma. So it's a very responsible task. No wonder he's a Brahma, because he's already handled and showed his expertise in handling responsibilities. So after he does that, after he matches the bodies and the karma of the spirit souls, it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, he has a very tough task. What is that? The spirit souls, they have been now brought into the material world. But in this material world, the situation is not very favorable for what they have come here to seek. So all the spirit souls, giving up enjoyment with the Supreme Lord, they have come to the material world seeking enjoyment. Purusha. They gave up the original Purusha and they said, let me find enjoyment in the material world. But unfortunately, Lord Krishna is mentioning, this is not a place for enjoyment. So now Lord Brahma has this most difficult task of creating an illusion of enjoyment so that at least it becomes bearable to stay here. If we are taken to a place and we have some expectations from that place of some enjoyment, let's say some of you go to a hill station and you are expecting some enjoyment there. So at least, you know, that resort where you are staying, the owner of that resort at least has to create some facade of enjoyment to convince you to pay those charges. Yes. At the beginning only, if there is a sign saying this is the winter season and this is a hill station, so the temperature drops below zero at night, please be careful. So, well, I came for enjoyment, but this is misery, so I would go back. So at least on the external, you know, he has to put up some painting, he has to put up some photograph, there has to be a fireplace there to just to attract you. Yes. So Lord Brahma also, just to make sure that we do not rebel and get frustrated with the situation here, there has to be some concept of some enjoyment here. So the first thing, before everything else is created, Lord Brahma, it is mentioned, he creates five coverings of ignorance. It's very interesting. These five coverings of ignorance, they are called Tamishra, Andha Tamishra, Tamas, Moha and Mahamoha. In very simple terms, I'll just explain what this is. Tamishra is forgetfulness of his constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. So Lord Brahma creates that illusion. Otherwise, when you come here, when the spirit soul comes here, he'll get super frustrated. Because as soon as he tries to enjoy, there is no enjoyment. And then he will feel, what am I going to do here? So he has to create that illusion of forgetting that actually I am the servant of the Supreme Lord, and there is an illusion that maybe, not in this way, in this way. So there is always that another route that is always made available by our mind. Oh, you didn't enjoy till now, what is your age? 22 years? Well, tomorrow is going to be a very special day in your life. So then you ask, what is going to be special tomorrow in my life? Is the sun going to rise from the west? No. The sun is going to rise from the east. Oh, is the sky not blue tomorrow? Is the sky going to be green tomorrow? No, the sky is going to be blue. What is so special about tomorrow? It's not my birthday also. So tomorrow, you are going to get some happiness. So, wow. And we look forward to the next day. And what happens the next day? We have the same set of friends. Yes. We watch the same channels. We have the same apps. Life goes on. Yes. So that illusion is the first thing that Lord Brahma has to somehow create. That is called Tamishra. Andha Tamishra is the illusion that death is the ultimate end. So any one of you who feels, excuse me, you said it's an illusion? I thought this is the truth. So that's why I'm speaking it very slowly. Death is the end of everything. This is an illusion called Andha Tamishra that Brahma creates as a second illusion that covers us all. It means death is not the ultimate end. It means the concept of reincarnation is something that all of us have to truly understand and truly think about it. How we are changing bodies even in this lifetime. So why not after death? So but that's the second covering that he creates. The third covering that Lord Brahma creates is called tamas. And that is the condition of not knowing anything about the spirit soul. So if you don't know anything about the spirit soul, there's a third covering that all of us have. The fourth covering is called moha, or the illusion of the bodily concept of life. So one is ignorance of the spirit soul, and the fourth is that I'm this body and things connected to this body are mine. So there is a fourth illusion. And then there is the fifth one, which is called Mahamoha. So Mahamoha is mad desire for sensual enjoyment. So now if you go through these five, you'll understand Kali Yuga is these all five at its peak level, with ever rising levels. So there is this concept of that I am the enjoyer. There is the concept that there's death is the ultimate end. Kal kya hoga, kisne jana, aaj hi sab kar lo. As much as you can. No knowledge about the spirit soul. Even if somebody tells you about the spirit soul, you see him as a fool. Me and mine. And then trying to enjoy in every small way, trying to eke out enjoyment. Slightest drop. Just like you have a sponge, and sometimes you dip that sponge in a water body, and then it has body, that sponge has water now, and then you squeeze it a little bit, yes? So you squeeze it a little bit, what happens? Water comes out. Next time you squeeze it, you have to squeeze harder. You can't put the same pressure because that water is gone now. Then you have to press a little bit more, then water comes out. The third time you do it, you have to do it more. If you do this five or six times, the seventh time when you do it, you actually have to squeeze it to a small ball. Yes? And still there will be no water. And still that illusion is that maybe I didn't squeeze it properly. Yes? So then you change your hand and you squeeze it with your left hand. That's essentially the thirst for sensual enjoyment that all of us have. Initially when we try to enjoy, just a little squeezing helps. So hey, this is good, this is easy. I don't know why these Hare Krishna people always discourage sensual gratification. The second time when you do it, that the effort has to be doubled. And then as time goes by, you realize, my God, this is getting more and more difficult. But then by that time, you're already kind of in a tight grip. So you can't do that. So Srila Shukdev Goswami, he says, the first created being and the most powerful demigod in this universe is Lord Brahma, who is always responsible for developing universal affairs. Born directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he dedicates his activities to the welfare of the entire universe, for he knows the purpose of the universal creation. And in the purport, Prabhupada writes, this is 5.1.7, Prabhupada writes, Lord Brahma is always thinking of how to improve the situation of the conditioned souls who have come to the material world to enjoy material activities. For this reason, he disseminates the Vedic knowledge throughout the universe for everyone's guidance. So this brings us to a very important concept. What is that? We just now discussed how Lord Brahma, in his compassion for all of us, has to cover five layers of ignorance. So when we hear this and when we stop here, it gives us a very negative image of Lord Brahma. Who is this person who creates ignorance? But that ignorance is not something that he wants to do, it is something that he is forced to do. Just to survive in this material world, we have to have that false hope that tomorrow I will be happy. Otherwise life will cease to go on. But as mentioned in this purport, Prabhupada is saying, because he has taken upon this responsibility that he is the maintainer, he is the person who is, he cares for everyone in this material world, he does not stop at just giving us ignorance, he also goes a step forward and he disseminates the Vedic knowledge so that we can also come out of those five modes of ignorance. So all of us who are sitting here, we are those fortunate few on this planet who first received the five layers of ignorance, but then we also received the Gita. We also received Vedic knowledge and we are trying to peel off slowly these five layers of ignorance. Yes. Here I would like to introduce you the concept of the four sampradayas. So to understand the concept of four sampradayas, think about it. You are in a deep dark well. You've fallen into a well. And all around you, you look, everyone around you is in the same situation. And over a period of time, people have got accustomed to that darkness. So they create some kind of a home within that well. It's a big, huge well. But it's dark. So instead of trying to get out of that well, you feel, you get frustrated, you feel, this is how life is. This is how life is meant to be. So just let me get accustomed to here. So you make some place to sit, you make some place to live your life there. And people also convince you, this is how I was born. I was born in this deep well. And one day suddenly you see, there is something that falls from that tiny opening of light up, up above. What is that? That is a rope. And you also see somebody up there, a tiny face which says, catch that rope. He's shouting, but then, because it's a deep well, so catch that rope. And everywhere around you, you look, none of them are interested in catching that rope. Everyone is saying, life has gone on till now. There are few struggles here and there, but finally, let's just accept the truth. So people around you, they are not interested in catching that rope. And some of them, when you try to look at them, they also discourage you. Say, you don't know what happens there. But here all of us are together. You know, sukh dukh ke saathi. Jo karenge, saath mein karenge. Saath mein roenge. Aap mere kandhe pe roo, main aapke kandhe pe roonga. Yes, but at least we are together. We don't know who that person is. So hardly a one amongst thousands of people, he will say, see, you crying on my shoulder and I crying on your shoulder, finally all we are doing is crying. I want a change. I want to test out at least what this person is saying. So you look up, he looks like a good person. This is that person who's thrown that rope. He looks like a gentleman. He does not look like a crook. And what do you have to lose? All you have to lose is your misery. All you have to lose is dark life. All you have to lose is your constant tears. A beggar, you know, if you see a beggar, when he is begging in the train, he's like careless. Both his hands are in front and he's saying begging, yes. Whereas some of us, we may not be that careless. We always, you know, touch our pockets. Is my wallet still there? Is my costly smartphone still there? Why? Well, we have something valuable there. So those of us who have something valuable in our pockets, we are very careful about it. And we, during any train journey, we are constantly checking it. But a beggar, he has nothing to lose. Hai kya jaane ke liye? Yes, so he is like carefree. Similarly, somebody in that well can think, aur kya hoga abhi? Aur kya bura hoga isse? So he catches that rope. Yes. And then that person brings him out. So I would like to compare this concept of a well and a rope to these four sampradayas. So this material world is like a deep dark ocean of ignorance, and four personalities have dropped the rope of mercy in this deep dark well. So one of them is Lord Brahma, one is Lakshmi Devi, one is Lord Shiva, and one is the Kumaras, the four Kumaras, and then we have the four sampradayas. So I introduce this concept of these sampradayas because, as we mentioned, Lord Brahma, he has this important responsibility of passing on Vedic knowledge. So how does he receive Vedic knowledge? That's a very beautiful story. When he's born on a lotus flower. And when he looks around, actually he is also in darkness. And he does not have any idea, who am I? There is no Gita course happening on 25th to 30th of December by Braj Mohan Prabhu for him. So he's just completely puzzled. He says, here I am, there's a lotus around me, I have four heads. But what is the source of my existence? What is the purpose of my existence? What am I supposed to do now? So he thinks, I'm on a lotus flower. If I find out the root of this lotus flower, there's nothing else around. So if I find out the root of my lotus flower on which I am born, at least I'll get some idea of what am I supposed to do now. So he gets down from the lotus flower and starts climbing down the lotus flower in an attempt to find out, who is my mother? Who is my source? And it is mentioned for millions and millions of years, he's climbing down the stalk of that lotus flower and he does not find the end of that lotus flower. And at one point of time, he sees a big ocean in the distance as he's climbing down. And there are violent waves on that ocean and they're just rising up and splashing and there's thunder and it creates a very terrifying sound. That kind of sound. And all he can do is, he spent millions of years coming down and when he sees that terrifying sound, when he sees that ocean, when he sees those splashing waves, out of fear, he runs his way up. So, have you ever been to a seashore in the dark of a night? One time I've been. It's really scary. The waves when they come and the white foam, at night time it becomes a very scary sight and sound. If you're all alone, it can be a very interesting experience. So I could just relate to it that Lord Brahma, he just scared to his wits, just climbs up. And then he thinks, this was the only way I could find out the purpose of my existence. But even that is ruled out now. Now what do I do? So at that time, when he's confused, he hears one sound. He says, tapa, tapa, tapa. Tapasya kijiye. Agar aap tapasya nahi karenge, to kabhi nahi janenge ki aap kaun hai, aapke jeevan ka uddeshya kya hai. So Lord Brahma, he just accepts it. There's no other. What do I stand to lose, as I mentioned? Aur kuch hai hi nahi. Ye ek hi awaz aayi hai. So he starts tapasya. And after he starts tapasya, the Supreme Lord appears to him. And in his heart, he disseminates, Tene Brahma Ridaya Adikavaya. Lord Krishna, from the third hole of his flute, he plays the flute and the third hole of this flute translates all the Vedic knowledge in Lord Brahma's heart in response to his tapasya. And that Lord Brahma, he drops a rope because he also has been rescued from darkness by the Supreme Lord. So he carries on that parampara. He becomes a parampara acharya. So we are all in Brahma Sampradaya. We are all followers of Lord Brahma. So he drops a rope into the deep dark well. And any one of us in this deep dark universe, if we catch on to that rope, what is this rope? The rope of instructions. What is his personal instructions? His personal instructions are in the form of the Brahma Samhita. At 7:45 in the morning, if you come to this temple, we sing very beautiful prayers. When the darshan opens, we sing prayers glorifying the Supreme Lord Krishna, his form, his qualities. And at the end of every stanza, there is a beautiful line, Govindam Adi Purusham Tam Aham Bhajami. So, the first time when he sees Krishna, he's just amazed at a beautiful sight. And if you want to know what was Lord Brahma's mood when he saw the Supreme Lord, you can read 3rd Canto, 9th chapter. It starts with the prayers of Lord Brahma when he sees Lord Krishna. And he describes the beautiful form of Krishna and he says, the only misfortune in this world, my dear Lord, is that people in this world have not seen your beautiful form. If anyone of this world sees your beautiful form, he says, why would he ever continue his lust? Why would he ever continue his greed? Why would he ever continue in all those anarthas? He says, I am just totally amazed by seeing your beautiful form. And he composes those Brahma Samhita prayers. Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. In 3.9.5, he sings, he sings one shloka where he gives one example. I'll just read the two lines. It's very beautiful. As I mentioned, it's beyond 2:30, so any one of you wants to leave, you're free to leave. But I just thought, very beautiful shlokas. So he says, Yetu tvadiya charanambuja kosha gandham jigranti karna vivarai shruti vata neetam. So Lord Brahma, he uses such a wonderful analogy because he's intelligent. So his poetry will not be just emotions. His poetry will be intelligent poetry. So he says, Jigranti. Jigranti means those who inhale. The literal translation of the word Jigranti is smelling, inhaling. So he says, Yetu tvadiya charanambuja kosha gandham. Those people in this world who inhale the fragrance of your lotus feet. Jigranti. Okay, so then you will say, but I don't even see Krishna. I don't have access to the deity form. I can't go so close to the Supreme Lord's deity form that I can smell, that I can inhale the beautiful fragrance that comes from the Lord's lotus feet. So how do I do that? So then he answers, you know what is this fragrance of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet? It says, Jigranti karna vivarai shruti vatanitam. So I'll explain what that means. He says, shruti vata. Vata means vayu, wind. So the fragrance is carried by the carrier of wind. So when the wind blows, it carries the fragrance. So if someone of you has put on some perfume, if you are at some distance from me, I cannot inhale that. But if there is some wind that flows, then that wind will carry that fragrance and bring it to me. That's how I can jigranti. Then I can inhale it. So he says, Shruti. Shruti means the Vedic knowledge. The Vedic literature can be compared to wind. And he says, Karna is the ears. The personality Karna was born from the ear. That's why he's called Karna. So Karna can be compared to the nose. So he says, do any one of you want to would like to inhale the fragrance of Supreme Lord's lotus feet? Yes? Then he says, Jigranti karna vivarai shruti vatanita. My dear friends, please inhale the fragrance of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet carried by the wind of the Vedic literature with your ears. He's saying, if you want to inhale the Supreme Lord's sweetness, please listen to the Vedic literature. So please attend classes, please come to Bhagavatam classes, please come to Sunday feast classes. He's saying, this is how you can inhale the Supreme Lord's fragrance of the lotus feet. And then, 5 shlokas later, this is 3.9.10, he again uses another example. So he's so intelligent and he wants to glorify the Supreme Lord. Very beautiful. He says, Tvam bhakti yoga paribhavitarit saroja ase shrute kshita patho nanunatha pumsam. Here, he again uses another analogy. What is this? Ase shrute kshita. So, ikshita is a word that means seeing. Shruta is again shruti, which is hearing. So, here he says, my dear Lord, if someone desires to see you, how do you see? He says, Shrutekshita. Aapko kaisa dekha ja sakta hai? Aapke bare mein sunke aapko dekha ja sakta hai. And this is interesting. Why? Because Lord Brahma is personally seeing the form of the Lord. So he is seeing the beautiful form of the Lord, but he knows this parampara has to go on. This parampara cannot stop here. This is the parampara of care. This is the parampara of compassion. Yes? So the parampara of compassion has to go on. So he knows, I did tapasya. For millions of years I was trying to find out my source. I could not find out. Then I had faith. So I did tapa, tapa, tapa. Then I can see the Supreme Lord. But unfortunately the Kali Yuga souls, if you are born in darkness, would you spend millions of years just trying to find out where you came from? Probably not. If the only answer that resounded in the ether was tapa, 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 you said, what tapa? I'm not going to do any tapa. Yes? There's no way I'm going to do any tapasya. So think about it. Lord Brahma thinks it is only because I did tapasya that I found out who I am And then after I found out who am I could take darshan of the Supreme Lord. But these wonderful personalities of Kali Yuga, they are not going to do any tapasya. So for them, he says, मैंने तो अपनी आंखों से भगवान को देखा, लेकिन क्या आप भगवान को देखना चाहते हैं? तो मैं आपको एक रास्ता बताता हूं. He is telling us, जिग्रंति कर्ण विवरे श्रुति वातनीतम आस्य श्रुते इक्षित ननु नाथ पुंसाम. He is saying, I am telling you how to see Krishna. You can see Krishna through your ears. You can smell Krishna through your ears. So he stresses a lot of importance on hearing in these prayers. I'll fast forward a little bit and I'll come to this one last incident from Lord Brahma's life. I'll take maybe 10 minutes from now and then we'll end. Lord Brahma is an acharya. Acharya means he teaches by his achar, he teaches by his behavior. So yes, he speaks, but his speaking can be rivaled by somebody else who also speaks. So if you are intelligent, you also speak something. And all of us know in Marathi, you know, there is a saying, I just remembered it, that Jhakaleli moot sava lakhache. They say, when your fist is closed, nobody knows what is there inside. So you can claim, oh, I have a diamond here, and then nobody can argue with me. But it is only when the fist is open, then you can see whether I actually have something valuable with me or no. Yes? So till it is said, a fool is revealed only when he starts speaking. Yes. Because if you are trying to just imitate somebody, you are just speaking somebody else's words, it won't last for long. Finally, you have to have some wealth of realizations inside your heart. So, as far as just talking is concerned, somebody else also can rival Lord Brahma. But what is the special quality of Lord Brahma? The special quality of Lord Brahma is, he not only speaks, he also practices what he speaks. So we'll take one example from Lord Brahma's life, which is of paramount importance to all the devotees of Lord Krishna. This is from the 10th canto of Krishna Leela, of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and specifically the 13th chapter. So in Sanskrit, this is called Brahma Vimohan Leela. In this pastime, Lord Brahma, the Acharya of our Sampradaya, the first living entity who disseminates Vedic knowledge, was completely bewildered. So you will ask me, are you sure you want to discuss this pastime? Probably we should have discussed some pastime where Lord Brahma is sitting on a huge Vyasasan and there are millions of disciples and he is giving a big Bhagavatam class and everyone is clapping after that Bhagavatam class. Why would you want to discuss Brahma Vimohan Leela? Is this a class that criticizes Lord Brahma or is this a class that glorifies Lord Brahma? No, this is a class that glorifies Lord Brahma. I am still on track. So I'll explain why we are discussing this pastime. To set the platform for this, I would like to mention one incident that happened in my life. So in the beginning years when I joined the Brahmacharya Ashram, at one point of time, I would look up to one Brahmachari. And one day, in his absence, he was not in the ashram. And two or three Brahmacharis were sitting, and they were just having a chat. And I would say they were not speaking very kind words about that Brahmachari. They were not exactly glorifying that other Brahmachari. And I happened to be nearby, so then I was kind of disturbed. I was thinking, he's not even here. So sometimes when you do have to speak the truth, it is said you speak truth, especially if it is negative, in the presence of that person. At least he gets a chance to clarify. So all of us are full of faults, there's no doubt about it. And all of us have done mistakes in our life. But at least you ask me, why did I do this? I get a chance to speak something. So in his physical absence, these two or three brahmacharis were speaking something and I was not very happy with it. So then in the evening, I went to one senior brahmachari in the ashram and I told him that, you know, today this happened and I'm like kind of not able to understand that how to deal with this situation. So then this senior brahmachari told me, so everyone in the Brahmacharya ashram is a teacher. So I said, okay, that's interesting. So then how do we come to this situation? So he said, some will teach you how to be. And he said, the rest will teach you how not to be. Yes. So in that sense, everyone is teaching you. So kuch log aapko ye sikhayenge ki aap kaisa bartav ki karna chahiye. Aur kuch log aapko aisa kaisa sikhayenge ki aap inki tarah mat hona. They're also teaching you. So he say, he told me, that senior brahmachari told me, you should always be grateful to everyone in the ashram because all of them are teaching you. So we are seeing this example from Lord Brahma's pastime, because Lord Brahma is teaching us how not to be in this pastime. So just to condense this whole story, Lord Brahma, as I mentioned in 3.9, he speaks when he sees the Supreme Lord. So the first shloka which he speaks, this is 3.9.1. The first line, the first words, think about it. Lord Brahma is born and for millions of years he has done tapasya, and then he did tapasya, and now Lord Krishna is in front of him. The first words that come out of Lord Brahma's mouth, these are the first words that were spoken in this universe. They are, Gyatosi me adya suchira nanu deha bhajam. This is Gyatosi. Gyatosi means, Lord Brahma says, I have known you. Gyatosi, jaan liya maine aapko. These are the first words that Lord Brahma speaks. And he is going to repent for these words. Because when he tells Krishna, I have known you, it's very difficult to actually fulfill those words. Nobody knows Krishna completely. Even Krishna himself does not know Krishna completely. Is mentioned. So this Brahma, it is mentioned, there was a asura called Aghasura, and he used to cause terror in the hearts of even the demigods. And one time he was sent to kill Krishna by Kamsa. Also Aghasur was the younger brother of Bakasur and Putana. So he had a personal vendetta also against Krishna. So the personal feelings were involved. Kamsa also sent him. So he had lot of problems with Krishna. He tried to kill Krishna, but in addition to Krishna, he also tried to kill his friends. Before this, all the demons, they had never attacked Krishna's friends. But he had so much anger against Krishna that he also tried to attack Krishna's friends. And you can read for further details, but Krishna, in Vrishabhanu Prabhu's words, in one class he spoke, he terminated his existence. In a very gentlemanly way, he said, he killed him. So Lord Brahma is up there when Aghasur enters Vrindavan, and all the demigods are watching. Oh, Aghasur has come. Now what will happen? And when all the cowherd boys and Krishna go into the mouth of Aghasur, actually everyone is terrified. Alas, alas, even Krishna has gone inside Aghasur's mouth. But then Krishna liberates him, gives him mukti. And all these demigods are watching, and Lord Brahma of all people, he is also watching this. He says, this Krishna killed Aghasur, who was a terror for even all the demigods. So this Krishna is an amazing person. And after this Aghasur Vadh, all the cowherd boyfriends, they have to take their lunch. So they sit in circles and they are taking lunch. And you know how young boys are. They have some fun and they have a lot of other things together. When they are together, it's all a different atmosphere. So one person, he says, would you like to taste a samosa? So another Gopa says, yes, yes, of course. He says, okay, open your mouth and close your eyes. So this Gopa closes his eyes, opens his mouth, and he pops in a samosa in his mouth. And he says, wow, samosa. And he starts eating it. But to his horror, that samosa is not filled with the regular stuffing. This samosa is filled with jasmine flowers. So jasmine flowers are very sweet in their fragrance, but they are very horrible to taste. Don't ever try it. They are very bitter to taste. So, you know, these kind of games are going on. One Gopa's tiffin, somebody else snatches and passes it on, then he passes it on and so on. So they make him run like that. So all those things are going on, and Lord Brahma is watching this whole show. And then at the end of it, something very interesting happens. What is that? One cowherd friend of Krishna's, he drinks some buttermilk. And as he drinks his buttermilk, he makes his cheeks, he fills up with buttermilk inside and he inflates his cheeks. Like that. And Krishna is sitting in front of him. And to his surprise, Krishna does like this. Like that. Yes. And that buttermilk spurts out of his mouth. That Gopa's mouth. And what does Krishna do? Krishna positions himself in such a way, he does not want to miss a single drop of that nectar. Yes. So he, you know, like this, in a very nice way, he catches every single drop of that juta, the remnants of this cowherd boy. And this completely bewilders Lord Brahma. Yes. So he says, Gyatosi, मतलब मैंने आपको जान लिया, आप कौन है, आप पूरे सृष्टि के कर्ता धरता है, आप यू आर द प्राइमरी क्रिएटर, यू आर माय सोर्स, यू आर द पर्सन. जस्ट बाय प्लेइंग ए फ्लूट यू पुट ऑल द वैदिक नॉलेज इन माय हार्ट. हु कैन इमेजिन, बट आई नो यू ज्ञातोसी. सो एक्सक्यूज मी, आई ज्ञातोसी, इनको तो मैं जानता हूं, ये तो भगवान है. When Bhumi came to me as a cow, saying, I am overburdened by kings who are treacherous. They are evil kings. Instead of protecting their citizens, they are harming their citizens. Then we went to Kshirodakshai Vishnu. We went to Kshir Sagar. And me and all the demigods and Bhumi, we prayed, Oh Krishna, on Bhumi, on earth, there is a need, because there are many kings like Jarasandha, Kamsa and so on, who need to be destroyed. And it is Kshirodakshai Vishnu who did not even appear in front of me. I could not even get his darshan. But after my prayers, this Vishnu, he just inspired in my heart, very soon I will appear in the Yadu dynasty. Go ahead. All of you also can assist by taking birth in the Yadu dynasty. Tell Bhumi, I will very soon lessen the load on her. I could not even see Kshirodakshai Vishnu. And this Kshirodakshai Vishnu, he is Krishna, and that Krishna, I think we should worship him, is it not? We offer bhoga to him and we eat prasad. Here this is reverse. Krishna is eating the prasad of his cowherd boyfriends. So this was too much for him. It is mentioned that sometimes people are too much attached to their conceptions. And then, even if a little change happens, they are not able to fathom it. They cannot understand it. So, Lord Brahma, this fault of Lord Brahma is, he was too much attached to the Aishwari of Lord, the Supreme Lord. So he was thinking, Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He should just show his power. He's playing flute and all the knowledge comes inside. This is power. But this sweetness, the madhurya of Krishna, was too much for him. So he said, I need to test. I was thinking he's the same person born in the Yadu dynasty. Is it the same person? So the word that is used in the Bhagavatam is Manju Mahitvam. Manju Mahitvam, it is mentioned that he just wanted to test Krishna. It's not that he did not believe Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He said, let me just test him. Kahin ye wo to nahi. Kahin ye wo hi hai. Lekin agar hai to kaise jhoota kaise kha sakte hai. Now, if Lord Brahma was really situated in proper sense, he should have remembered, अरे बाबा, दिस इज द्वापर युग. इन त्रेता युग लॉर्ड रामचंद्र ऑल्सो अपियर्ड. एंड वॉट डिड लॉर्ड रामचंद्र डू? लॉर्ड रामचंद्र, वेन ही वेंट टू द फॉरेस्ट, वन टाइम ही वॉज अप्रोच बाय शबरी, एंड शबरी टुक दोज स्मॉल फ्रूट्स, टेस्टेड देम, एंड ओनली वेन दे वर स्वीट विथ लव शी चोज एवरी सिंगल बेरी एंड देन शी गेव टू लॉर्ड रामचंद्र. सो इट वॉज नॉट समथिंग दैट द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड हैज नेवर डन बिफोर. Lord Ramchandra has eaten the jhuta of Shabri. Why he ate the jhuta of Shabri? Out of love. Just out of love. So when Lord Krishna is tasting the buttermilk that comes out of the mouth of his cowherd boyfriend, is it something unprecedented? No, it's not something unprecedented. But it was just difficult for Lord Brahma, somebody whose darshan he could not get. And now he is eating the remnants of another ordinary living entity. So he said, I just need to test. So what did he do? He did not harm anybody. Indra, he tried to harm the Vrajvasis. He showered Samvartaka clouds. The demons who came, they tried to poison. Kaliya poisoned the Yamuna. So they tried to do quite extensive damage. What did Lord Brahma do? Did he harm anybody? No. Did he kill anybody? No. Did he try to poison anybody? No. You know what he did? Very, very simply and harmlessly, he just put all the cowherd boyfriends to sleep and took them to another place, put them there, and then came here to see the fun. That Lord Krishna, when he will see all his friends, all the vatsa, all the calves absent, what will happen to Krishna? Chalo, maza dekhte hain. And Lord Brahma came there. And what did he see? He tried to fool others, but he himself got fooled. What happened is, Lord Krishna, understanding that Vidhikritam, it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Vidhikritam means he understood it is Lord Brahma's doing. he just expanded himself into all the cowherd boyfriends and all the cows. So every single cowherd boyfriend that Krishna had, somebody had curly hair, so Krishna expanded into exactly the same features, fair, dark, a spot on the cheeks, somebody had a spot here, curly hair, somebody had a yellow cloth around his waist, exactly the same features, the teeth, the color of the eyes, the shape of the ears, the nose, everything. And not just all the humans, even the calves. So just think about it. He just duplicated every single of his accomplices. And when Lord Brahma came, he just could not believe that what happened. To the extent that when he came and he wanted to see the bewilderment of Lord Krishna, he saw he's completely happy. He's with his boyfriends and he's with his calves and they're having normal time. For a moment he thought, did I actually take them there? It was done with such perfection, spotless, immaculate. So he thought, I mean, chori kiya, oh kiya na? So he again checked, it is mentioned, oh, they're still asleep in Yoga Nidra. It means this is something that has been rectified, the situation has been rectified by Krishna. Then he understood, it seems he is that Supreme Lord Krishna. But this is not the end of the story. When you have, and I was mentioning that story of my thumb being operated upon, so I mentioned how that person went to the bone, yes, trying to take that small piece out. So if somebody is suffering from cancer and he has a tumor inside, let's say inside his brain, and then he's undergoing a surgery, so the surgeon, he takes out every small bit of the tumor inside. Yes, he would not allow even a small bit of flesh. What is a tumor? Tumor is actually your body cells, but they multiply more than necessary. So even if a single one of those cells remains in the body and you complete the surgery, after some years they will again remultiply and again there will be a tumor. So that's very dangerous. So a good surgeon makes sure that this surgery will never be repeated. So in essence what he does is, he takes out every small bit of those cells, the tumor cells, and makes sure that it is completely clean. Similarly, Krishna wanted to make sure this testing fault of Lord Brahma, the ignorance of the most intelligent person, this should never again happen. So what he did was, right in front of Lord Brahma, as he was seeing the expansions of Lord Krishna, every single cowherd boyfriend, every single calf turned into a four-handed Vishnu form, complete with Shrivatsa, Kaustubmani, blue-colored body, Pitambar Vastra, and as it is mentioned, a king is always accompanied by his ministers. So this every single, just imagine, multiple forms of Lord Vishnu. And all of them were accompanied by personifications of three modes, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Everything that is there, the energy of the Supreme Lord was in a personified form. Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma. And then another thing happened. So he is taking the bewilderment of Lord Brahma to higher and higher levels. Every single form that had turned into Lord Vishnu had at his feet Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and all the other demigods performing aarti to that Vishnu form. So he saw many other Brahmas worshipping every single Vishnu form. So now, you know, his four heads are, so what is this? So, gyatosi. Kaha gyatosi, ye kya hai? Kuch bhi samajh mein nahi aaya mujhe to. I have not even understood a little bit about Krishna. And then he takes it to another level. In one moment, like this, everything disappears. So first there is creation, then there is maintenance, and then Krishna, just everything vanishes. And what does Lord Brahma see? He just sees a small little, it was maybe 4.5 or 5 years child. This happened before Govardhan Leela. So 4.5 years probably. There's a small child. In his left hand there is some curd rice with some fruit pieces. And he's just looking at Brahma in a very innocent way. That was the vision that was left in front of Lord Brahma. So Brahma is saying, what was that? Huh? This is completely bewildered. And then in chapter 14 of the 10th canto, he offers prayers to Lord Krishna. So the first prayer that Lord Brahma offers is, in that first prayer, which is 10.14.1, if you see, he offers prayers to the two-handed form of Krishna. Why? Because till Krishna Leela, he always knew about Vishnu who has four hands. And that was the main problem why this situation arose, that four-handed form of Vishnu gives an impression of Aishwarya. But in the first shloka that he offers, he says, I offer my prayers to this two-handed form of sweetness of Krishna. I failed to realize the sweetness of this two-handed form of Krishna. So, it is mentioned in India, whenever you have some disease, there are four levels of treatment. So the first level of treatment for a normal Indian is allopathy. You go to a doctor, you get some medicines. And sometimes for some diseases it does not work. So then the second level of treatment, if allopathy does not work, is homeopathy. Sometimes homeopathy also does not work. Then what do? You give sympathy. Sometimes sympathy also does not work. Then you have to go to Tirupati. Yes. So Lord Krishna, he gave the fourth level of treatment to Lord Brahma. Yes. Because greater the person, greater is the chance that he can help others, and also greater is the chance that he can misguide others. So because Lord Brahma is interested and is engaged in the dissemination of Vedic knowledge, but this small thing that he thought Aishwarya is better than Madhurya, he thought opulence is better than sweetness, so Krishna corrected it in a very fine way. One thing that we can learn from this is, and as I was mentioning, that Lord Brahma is an Acharya, so why does he enact this pastime? Is that committing a mistake is not a problem. But what is our response to that mistake? That is the real lesson to be learnt. So Lord Brahma, he forgot Krishna, and that's why he became proud. But as soon as he saw Krishna, as soon as he remembered, and he understood who is Krishna, he immediately became humble. So, if you read those prayers, he says, my dear Lord, I understood your sweetness. He says, actually I am like a small baby in the womb of a mother. Sometimes in Hindu culture, you know, in India they say, "Arey, tujhe kya malum? Tu to abhi maa ke pet se bhi bahar nahi nikla hai." Sometimes they say, so it's, you know, that is the parampara. Lord Brahma says, actually, you know, I am in the Brahmanda. So this is Tvadiyodarayata Vishwasya Dhamne. Yes, the Brahmanda is in Lord Krishna's abdomen. So he says, actually I am like an embryo in the womb of a pregnant mother. So sometimes the embryo in the womb of a pregnant mother sometimes kicks the mother from inside. But the mother never takes any issue with that. In fact, she is happy that the child is developing properly. So he says, similarly, I am also like a baby inside your womb, and I kicked you a little bit here and there, so please don't mind it. Just pardon me, yes? So, he offers very beautiful prayers, and he is teaching us that committing a mistake is not a problem, but then we offer our prayers, we rectify those mistakes, we accept those mistakes. And it is mentioned, the demigods, they never ever touch the earthly ground. Yes? So when demigods come, they are usually flying in the sky. In Mahabharata, Ramayana, when the demigods come. But the highest demigod, Lord Brahma, when he saw the vision of this 5-year-old boy standing in front of him in a very simple way, just looking at him. So now what? This Lord Brahma and his followers also never touched the ground. This Lord Brahma touched the earth, Vrindavan specifically. He prostrated himself like a rod, and usually when we offer pranams, we offer pranams on our stomach, so our face is down and our back is up, yes? So he offered pranams like that, but he had four heads. So it is mentioned, he changed his posture four times. He turned around and made sure with all the four heads in four directions, he touched his head to the lotus feet of Krishna. So he offered pranams, turned, again offered pranams, turned, again offered. He wanted to make sure to please Krishna, he wanted to make sure and, you know, tell all of his followers, I committed a mistake, but I recognized my mistake and I'm ready to rectify my mistake. So this is something that we can learn from him. And this Lord Brahma to fully rectify that mistake now. But offering pranams is also not the end. Yes. In the next avatar of Lord Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this Lord Brahma takes that rectification, this deep repentance that he has. Arey, maine aise kaise kiya? Why did I ever get a desire to test Lord Krishna? He comes as Srila Haridas Thakur. And as Srila Haridas Thakur, what does he do? He is born in a non-Vedic family. The family in which he was born, it is outside Vedic culture. So when he would chant the names of Lord Krishna from his early life, the Hindus would stay away from him. The Hindus would reject him, saying, oh, he is from that non-Vedic family. He is not from the Hindu religion. And they were orthodox days. And because he was from another religion, his own people would reject Haridas Thakur, thinking that, oh, he is from our religion, but he is chanting the Hindu god Krishna's names. So in this way, he arranged that he was beyond social obligations. Just like in 5th canto we find how Jad Bharat, purposefully he led a life that made people feel he is a foolish person. Why did he do that? So that he will be free of all obligations and he would constantly serve the Supreme Lord in his mind. Similarly, Lord Brahma, when he appears as Haridas Thakur, he takes a birth like that so that he has no obligations from the Hindus, he has no obligations from his own religion people, and right from his early days, he constantly sang the glories, especially the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, which is none other than, as Lord Srila Prabhupada taught us, it is a mantra that begs from Srimati Radharani, begs from Krishna, the sweet aspect of Krishna in Vrindavan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So especially as Haridas Thakur, he takes his rectification, his repentance to the highest level and says, in this lifetime now, my asking for forgiveness is not just asking for forgiveness. See, when you do a mistake, one thing is to say sorry. I'm sorry for it. And the best level, the higher level is to do something that also teaches others to not do that mistake. So as Haridas Thakur is constantly chanting the holy names and his Namacharya, and he's also spreading the holy name to all of us, and we have got this wonderful opportunity that we can follow Lord Brahma, who in a form of a Mahajan not only creates ignorance, not only gives Vedic knowledge to disseminate that ignorance, but also as an Acharya he shows that the greater aspect of Krishna that we should imbibe in our heart is not the Aishwarya of Krishna, but actually the sweetness of Krishna. And how to do that? In the age of Kali Yuga, by the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So I'm very thankful to you for your patient listening. There were so many other things also that need to be discussed, but as I mentioned, it's an infinite topic and I was constantly looking at that wall clock there. So within the limitations that I had and within the limitations that you had, I tried to do some justice to this topic. But Lord Brahma is a very amazing personality, and especially for followers of ISKCON, is our Sampradaya Acharya. So we should never forget that rope that is hanging, and especially as Haridas Thakur is teaching us to chant the holy names. So thank you very much for your patient listening. I'm very grateful to all of you and also to the organizers for giving me a chance to speak about Lord Brahma. Hare Krishna. So we'll have Kirtan now, and after that there is Mahaprasad for all of you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.